conference committee will come to order. Members, we have to try to make the best use of our time. So we're going to get right back to work here, and we will work until the Senate is under call, I think, and we'll let you know when that is. And then we'll have to recess again, and I'm thinking we'll probably recess for an hour, and that way hopefully the Senate can get most of its work done and everyone can eat, and then we'll come back and work through the afternoon because we got a lot to do.
Madam Chair?
Representative Kalin.
I just want to ask a process question. I'm sorry we didn't get a chance to talk about this. I wanted to get us reconvened as soon as we could after we figure out what the heck we're doing in the House. I guess I would like to know kind of a game plan, because I think that we have a difficult side-by-side to work through, and I think different in some ways we may be better off. I don't want to go down the process of too much public testimony when really I think we'd first have to reconcile what approach we're going to take here on putting together the bill. And so I'd like for us to come to a game plan in a minute or two about how we want to spend the day, and then...
Well, Representative Kalin, my plan was to take testimony from MHFA, testimony from Commerce, go through their detailed questions and concerns and suggestions, and then take any other public testimony. I think today's the day. We just need to get all the public testimony done. And then we'll have to get to work on reconciling differences and whether we do have to recess for a while to have some... put some thought into that before we come back with, you know, if we want to come back with offers or suggestions for the conference committee, we'll get to that. But I think that's the orderly procession that we need to go through to, you know, get all the information in front of us and then go from there. It's not not that long of a bill. I don't think it'll be that hard to figure this out.
Well, Madam Chair, I guess I'm not interested in taking public testimony on provisions that we don't yet have agreement that we're interested in, that both sides are interested in including. And we do have short time. I just want to make sure
we want to have agreement on including it before we take testimony on it. I think the whole point of having testimony is to have people say if they have a preference for one position or another. We just need to hear that now and get that out, and then we'll sit down and make our decisions. That's the purpose of the testimony, just to give us input about pros and cons of different things on the different sides. And that's why I think we should have testimony.
Well, Madam Chair, I guess since this bill doesn't easily lend itself to same and similars, I think we may have ability to adopt or agree on a framework that is essentially a same and similar framework. And I think that there's a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'd like to be able to do today before we do public testimony, so we have a sense of where the concerns are. So I do want to hear from OES and MHFA.
Well, Representative Kalin, we've already put the agenda out. We already have a plan. So I'd like to proceed in that order, but then I think the next thing we can do is focus on same and similar. I think that's a really good suggestion. If we could try to get that done today, that would be a lot of progress. But we can talk more during the recess as well.
Thank you.
So let's proceed. We ask MHFA, because they will take less time than the OES to give us some testimony now about their portion of this plan, briefly, and speak to the language, please, that's in the bill. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jeanette Blankenship with Minnesota Housing Finance Agency, and I want to talk to you about just the Senate Subdivision 3A and House Section 4 on residential energy efficiency programs, starting basically R6. The residential energy efficiency program will be used in conjunction with our existing lender network. We have over 300 lenders statewide who already administer a home improvement loan program, which targets basically moderate income homeowners. The purpose of this, including it in here, would be targeting SEP dollars, state energy program, to those who don't qualify for weatherization, but are within our income guidelines, which currently go up to about $93,000. So you'd be targeting those from about $40,000 to $93,000. To kind of incent them to borrow but have either a write-down, a grant, perhaps a rebate, to make that more attractive to do energy efficiency improvements in their home. We do prefer the House language because it's more flexible, and it allows for us to make this work for borrowers. However, that might, if we find something 3 months down the road that we need to shift our approach, just allows for that flexibility. We could do an interest rate write-down, like I said, to 0%, which would be at about that 25% contribution from stimulus dollars compared to the homeowner's contribution. Or it could do a grant that is 25% of the loan, which would reduce the amount of loan that the borrower would have to repay. We've also, so that's on residential energy efficiency. I also want you to be aware, we have been working with the Office of Energy Security and the CAP agencies on the weatherization to ensure that they can reach rental properties more easily. We provided them with a list of potential properties that are in our portfolio that are affordable multifamily rental properties to get them started to say, hey, let's start this dialogue. If you want to reach more folks with weatherization dollars and reach more renters, we already have a whole portfolio of affordable multifamily rental properties. So we have been in those discussions, and we also made all of those in our portfolio aware that this is a resource they may be eligible for and encourage them to contact their local CAP.
All right,
so
thank
I'll
you.
Stand for questions.
Ms. Blankenship, so in terms of the rental program, that would be the extent of your involvement, would be to give the names and lists to Commerce, and then they would be responsible for developing that program?
The CAP agencies, sorry, Madam Chair, members of the committee, the CAP agencies already have the ability to weatherize multifamily rental properties. So typically they haven't, but with this influx of capital, they're able to reach more folks. So we have provided that. We also have encouraged the folks in our portfolio who own affordable multifamily rental properties to contact their local CAP. So it's not just the one way of telling CAPs to talk to them. We're also encouraging those who own affordable properties to talk to the CAP agencies.
Okay.
So that's the extent. And it also, because of that, stretches state dollars further. We often would be rehabbing these properties to maintain affordability. And some of the activities we do include weatherization-type activities. So you're going to stretch state dollars further by using some federal weatherization dollars.
And Ms. Blankenship, just to go back to the different language on the residential programs, I think you're talking about on the Senate side on R6, 318 to 335 versus the House 413 to 418?
Correct.
Okay, and you let's see what the differences are here with the House and Senate are. We required that loans be based on an energy audit, and then we have a list of authorized expenditures, although it's not exclusive. It says include but not limited to. So that's the only difference that I can see.
Madam Chair, on that section, the energy audits, we believe, would not make sense for all borrowers. If you're just getting a furnace, for example, you don't need a full energy audit. You know what that furnace is going to do to improve the energy efficiency of your home. So it's an Energy Star approved. So while we'll encourage energy audits, it won't be necessary. On the second piece, for the improvements, those are fine because we would include those regardless. And because this is state energy program money, it won't be used for non-energy efficiency items. So that language is fine to stay in, and we would likely look at each of those and on a standard basis estimate the energy savings so that we can track, you know, for borrowers what their energy savings would be. On the remaining piece that the House does not have in, 4-1, continuing on to 5-6, it may depend on, you know, the level of our involvement with that. We are happy to do rebates, or the Office of Energy Security could do those. We will encourage, obviously, windows with for borrowers, et cetera. So some of this we can include in our loan program that we would run.
Well, I'm trying to remember. I think there was a little ambiguity about whether some of these sections would apply to Commerce or MHFA or both. It says the commissioner. You weren't there. I was, but I didn't write it, so I don't remember what we were thinking here. I mean, it's my sense that this would really be directed more at Commerce.
Madam Chair, that's our understanding, too. When you look at the activities included, they are ones that Commerce is directing, such as weatherization.
So perhaps we should clarify that on 4-1 to 4-17, That's intended to direct commerce. And then on the next page about the direct rebates and the 25%, you mentioned that. And I guess the reason that we put that in there was, again, we talked about before about the need to have, you know, different options for different homeowners, because there will be, you know, some won't want to take out a loan, or some will find it difficult to take out a loan product. And so we want to have other options. So does this language on 418 to 426 limit you in a specific way? If we can assume that this part applies to MHFA.
Madam Chair, members, we do interpret that applying to us. Mm-hmm. And I think it is somewhat limiting in that, you know, if a 0% on a $5,000 loan over 10 years actually writes it down about 27%. The stimulus money is 27% of that value. We wouldn't want to then make someone pay 0.12% interest on that loan if it's a lot easier to say, you know, this is a 0% loan over 10 years and make that really attractive to the borrower.
So
I think it is somewhat limiting to have a firm number in there, and we would, of course, target maximizing stimulus dollars and leveraging private and other resources.
Mr. Fuller?
Madam Chair, if you look at R7, line 4.24, it talks about the remainder coming from the MHFA, which is, of course, they're the that's in conflict with the thought that we're talking about their money. So at least either that language would have to be stricken, or it would have to have a larger context when you go up to 4.18, when you say a portion of this appropriation,
that's
if that's
true.
Referring to the appropriation MHFA, or was it just sort of because of the press of time at the time put in the wrong place?
Yeah, I mean, I think the thought that we, as a concept that we discussed, that this, you know, was general for all the dollars that would be going out to for residential non-low-income programs, residential efficiency programs should follow these general guidelines, whether they're through MHFA or Commerce. But I'm not sure if it's drafted quite clearly to state that. As you said, Mr. Fuller, I think we have to clean that language up just a little bit. So then let me just ask one more thing about the windows. And 427 to 56, would that cause, if your agency, I mean, some of your programs would be used for window replacement or repair, so can you speak to that language?
Madam Chair, I'll defer to Commerce on this. I do understand that it's under federal law, you wouldn't be able to require this as far as being in this in state, if this is the same language. If it's not, we use a lender network, and so we don't want to put too much requirement on our lenders aside from here are the eligible activities. So to the extent that, a lender would have to be analyzing that a homeowner has gone and gotten some bid on windows, we think that's pretty impractical.
What can you just tell us what federal law or rule you're referring to that says you can't do this?
Madam Chair, I don't know if it's this piece. I may be mistaken. If it's produced in this state, I'm going to defer to the Department of Commerce Office of Energy Security to talk about what federal law or rule that might apply to.
All right, we'll ask.
So I'm not
we're asking
expert.
For that authority. We just
yes.
haven't seen specifics yep. on that. Okay, Representative Kalin.
I think Representative might have something to this first.
Okay, on this point, Representative McNamara.
Madam Chair, I think it'll be good when the time gets right if we could hear from the window manufacturer specifically about some possible language ideas that they may have that would encourage our manufacturers do manufacture really good energy efficient windows that would be allowed under the federal regulations of, because there's federal money here, we have to be careful that we don't say that it has to be Minnesota made, but we're lucky that we have a number of manufacturers in our state that really are doing a great job from energy conservation. If we're asking for energy conservation windows, it's naturally going to help our folks that are ahead of the curve. So along these lines, I think we're going to need some flexibility, but I think there is potentially, I don't know if we'll put it actually in the bill, we may want to, about energy efficiency and certain criteria or whatever, but I think it will help our Minnesota companies and get us what we want.
Well, Representative McNamara, that's exactly why we put this in here, was to try to have that multiplier effect so that Minnesota companies could provide these windows and we could also create supply jobs in the manufacturing sector as a result. We still haven't heard any authority for why we can't do this, and I'm waiting to hear that. But if there's a better way to accomplish it, that's great. You know, I'm open to suggestions. So, all right. Thank
Madam
you, Representative
Chair.
Kalin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Blankenship, on the R6, lines 4-5 to 4-17, if we were to include that language and Commerce were to be the commissioner referred to in line 4-1, what might MHFA's role be in administering those items 1 and 2 in the Senate language?
Madam Chair, Representative Kalin, on 4-5 to 4-11, on the neighborhood saturation, we can talk to our lenders about targeting, for example, the foreclosed areas. A lot of our lenders work all across the state, but they would have access to, we have a list of targeted zip codes that have the highest rate and highest percent of foreclosed properties, for example. And that was one thing we were talking about, to at least provide that to them to encourage them to target those areas if we're looking for a saturation. We do believe a lot of that would fall on Commerce regarding the weatherization and the other products, but regarding our residential energy efficiency loan program, that would be one thing we could do. We also, regarding the weatherization for the rental properties, just by targeting a low-income affordable rental property that has 100 units, you are concentrating your dollars and really targeting them to a high-need population to help keep their utility bills down and have a more energy-efficient place to live. On 4-12 to 4-17, I don't know if we would encourage this in our loan program. Just to do quick fixes, I think we'd want people to do what their home needs. So I see a lot of this perhaps going more towards weatherization in Department of Commerce.
Yeah, and this quick fix idea is more intended for low-cost, easily installed products like caulking, light bulbs, things like that you probably wouldn't be getting to your level of funding for, I'm guessing. Representative Kalin?
Thank you, Madam Chair. One of the questions that I've heard and we've heard repeatedly is we've been talking about, I think even before the stimulus bill was being put together, in fact, I remember you and I having this conversation, Madam Chair, in November, about what's the best way to reach homeowners, what's the best tool to get residential efficiency for those who aren't eligible for LIHEAP, who don't meet the weatherization eligibility. And I'm just wondering if you have some thoughts, and I'm hopeful that conference members and other learned people out in the audience can chime in on, you know, with interest rates so low today, whether an interest rate buy down, I mean, that's my interest in the 25% upfront funding opportunity. What have you heard from lenders, from participating borrowers, experts out in the community, about other tools other than interest rate buy down, or I don't know, the 25%, is an upfront grant going to be enough to tip? Are there other things that we should be looking at that could leverage the $12 million or $13 million into a deeper investment?
Ms. Blankenship.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Kalin. We did survey our lenders and asked them regarding homeowners, what's going to incent them to do more energy efficiency? And a lot of them said the interest rate reduction would be a huge incentive. We have a program that's a subset of our home improvement loan program that targets communities. It's called the Community Fix-Up Fund rather than just the Fix-Up Fund. And it does, if a community kind of has a priority and targets that, it reduces the interest rate. And we do see that reaches more folks who choose more for the ones that are energy efficiency targeted, like NEC might have one or CE, then it does reach more. More people, they're more interested in the energy efficiency with the write down. So even though interest rates are low right now, I think that is an incentive. The grant, we could tie it to certain improvements that might have high paybacks on energy efficiency that might be a little cost prohibitive. And so we were looking at what products might you tie, if you're borrowing money, might you, you know, accompany that with a grant. So we were doing some research on that, and I can get back to you on the specifics. I don't have any other brilliant ideas to share on how to reach more moderate income homeowners, aside from we have a statewide lender network that does have a lot of, you've got small community banks in rural Minnesota that really know their communities and can talk to them about energy efficiency. You know, if we really want to get the word out about windows, you would have, you know, Marvin Anderson and others in the state, you know, have materials at those lenders so that if someone's considering this loan, that they have some extra information there available to them. So that might be one way to kind of pair that up.
Well, thank you.
I just want to explore a couple more things because I think these go to several different areas of the bill. You mentioned the windows folks, and when we met in Representative Olin's office, who has Marvin, of course, up in the northwest corner, one of the things that they did express is that, I think it was Anderson who said that they're at 6% of their package, and where an interest write down or a competitor, a credit enhancement would be a very useful tool for them in doing the efficiency stuff. So I hope that you can connect with them and see if that package, if there's a way to continue to leverage involvement there. Just a question about whether you've been, how deeply you've been engaged in talking to the utilities and wrapping in the conservation improvement program and the rebates and buy downs that for the more capital intensive projects.
Madam Chair, Representative Kalin, we have been talking to the utilities more on the affordable multifamily rental side and have a pilot project with SIP with them there. So we're exploring how much more we would do on the rental side if there were additional funds. For example, if you're weatherizing, and we could partner our current money that we use to do the rehab and then maybe do some SIP if it's beyond the weatherization numbers. On the single-family side, we have not explored as much SIP activity there just because the payback is reduced, but we could certainly initiate those conversations. But it's been the multifamily side.
One last question, Madam Chair.
Representative Kalin.
Thank you. On the weatherization piece, the Senate provision has a saturation program, including vacant homes, and I think we'll need to hear from Office of Energy Security on kind of eligibility, because I believe it's the person, not the structure.
That's what I was going to ask next, because I think Ms. Blankenship wrote that language or helped us with that language on foreclosed homes. So
I guess on that issue, but also then on the non-weatherization funds where you're above the 200% or 180%, wherever you go, is it also the person, not the – do we have the same issue on foreclosure, like on the saturation program you talked about that's on R6? For instance, I know North Minneapolis has been one community that's been talked about. Do we also have that eligibility hurdle in terms of the person, not the structure that qualifies under the MHFA loan origination program?
Madam Chair, Representative Kalin, it is a homeowner program, so at this point you would need a homeowner to be borrowing that. We have put a lot of resources and loaned, for example, the GMIC in North Minneapolis, $10 million to acquire and rehab foreclosed properties and provide some of that gap financing to resell those properties. So a lot of the activity they're doing with that is weatherization-related activity in addition to rehabbing the whole home. So we're using other loan dollars to achieve that for vacant homes. But as far as an individual borrower taking out a loan, I think it makes more sense to have that home be occupied by that borrower. And if we're going to be doing rehab work in a vacant home, then we use our kind of gap financing money that we have through different funds to achieve that.
And Ms. Blankenship, can you talk about the language relating to applying for a waiver for weatherization dollars on foreclosed homes?
Madam Chair, committee members, we have been looking
page, in. Excuse me, this is on page R5, members, at the top of R5 on the Senate side. Go ahead, please.
We've been talking to our federal delegation about whether this was possible, because we do have some exceptions in our state policy on weatherization to do this for example, Habitat homes, that, you know, you if you know someone's going to be income eligible and it will be occupied, that you could use the weatherization dollars for those homes. So under the Neighborhood Stabilization Program, 25% of the funds coming to the state, nationwide, have to be used for incomes below 50% of median, which basically is going to achieve the weatherization income guidelines. So we were trying to figure out if we're able to use, if you're going to certify that the home will be occupied by someone that's income eligible, that they could use weatherization dollars to do those eligible activities. The issue might be that those earning under 50% AMI are more likely to be renters. There may be some homeowners, but they're more likely to be renters. So that's, they're exploring, you know, if you use weatherization dollars on a home and it has to be income eligible, they're earning under $44,000 or $40,000. And, everyone coming by is earning $50,000. Then you can't resell that home because the weatherization dollars used on it, or you pay those back. So that's the issue that we're confronting there. So they could use those dollars, but it may not be practical.
So they could use neighborhood stabilization dollars?
Yes, certainly.
But this was referring to a waiver for weatherization dollars specifically, and do you think that's something you'll proceed with or not?
It may be impractical, mm-hmm. Madam Chair.
Because of the income levels?
Yes.
And home ownership? Okay.
But, Madam Chair, if Gimmick is rehabbing a house in North Minneapolis, they have a buyer lined up who meets the eligibility requirements, then they should be able to use those weatherization dollars. And that's what we were asking the Office of Energy Security to allow.
Okay. And Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to clarify, would you need language in the bill to qualify under those circumstances, or would it just be working it out with OES to make sure that it's within existing rules?
We would not need language in the bill.
Okay.
Isn't most weatherization work delivered to homeowners?
Mm-hmm.
So
yes,
most
Madam
people
Chair.
Eligible for weatherization are homeowners.
Madam
I mean, not
Chair.
Eligible. I
right.
shouldn't say that. That's
most
wrong.
Most people eligible are renters.
Universe. Got it. But most of the dollars are delivered to homeowners. So I guess I'm trying to reconcile that with what you said, that you're not going to find home buyers who are eligible for weatherization. But a lot of them already own homes. So,
Madam Chair, many of the buyers now, some will be below the 200% of poverty level, but many may be just above that. And so they would not be able to purchase a home rehabbed with NSP and weatherization dollars because the weatherization dollars would be attached. Many homeowners who get weatherization have been in their home a long time mm-hmm. and bought that home at a lot lower level and can afford that mortgage. So.
Representative Champion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And perhaps this question is targeted correctly to you, but if not, you can tell me that I should ask someone else. But because we're talking a lot about weatherization, I'm trying to reconcile in my mind how this happens. For an example, it's my understanding that the allocation of a weatherization dollars goes through OES and then is distributed or allocated to, let's say, your community action agencies. And so my question is, those are stimulus dollars that come through will, of course, be federal. Therefore, when the allocation is made to the community action agencies to their respective vendors, is there a requirement for the vendors to meet certain inclusion goals that I think that the federal government requires under the law?
Madam Chair, Representative Champion, I'm probably not the best to answer that. I'll defer to the CAPS and the Office of Energy Security.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Strom, did you want to add to this discussion?
I'm Sheldon Strom with the Center for Energy and Environment. I just wanted to provide a little information regarding the role of the utility incentives. We've been working with a number of utilities, and I think it's pretty clear that Minnesota utilities are now going to be making some major initiatives in the residential sector, probably including some low-cost programs and probably including rebates and incentives that could be packaged with this money to give the consumer an even better deal. And then I just also wanted to mention that there's also a lot of other funding sources out there besides MHFA. And a typical practice, might be to use some MHFA funds and match it up with some local funds. And so I think rather than trying to prescribe that it should be a low-interest loan or whatever, if you give MHFA the flexibility to have this money as a grant of, say, 25% or whatever, then they can match that up with their financing for a zero-interest loan program, or local financing might be a better deal in some cases. So I think the more flexibility, the better, and I think the local communities and local lenders can figure out whether it's best to use it as a grant or a zero-interest loan or a deferred loan packaged with other financing. I don't know if that's helpful.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that most folks who will be receiving money would like it to be as flexible as possible and with as few strings attached as possible. That's kind of goes without saying. I guess I'm flexible, too, as long as we know there's a commitment to try to really think outside the box and reach people more than we've reached before, because things are different. This is a different world than we've had in previous years with the amount of money and with the slow economy, and trying to actually make use of these dollars and get people into the program is going to be a challenge. So we just want to make sure that MHFA, Mr. Strom, and others will be just trying to think creatively about how to do that. And that's really what we're getting at here.
And Madam Chair,
Representative Kaelin.
To that point, and I know Council is working out the, is writing the final bill here. I just want to make sure that Mr. Fuller and Mr. Eliff chime in here on R6, the Senate language. To Mr. Strom's question, the top of the line 318 to 319 in the Senate language, the $13,500,000 would be transferred to the MHFA, and that transfer might, am I correct, and I hope Mr. Fuller, Mr. Eliff, or somebody will correct me, that my reading of that is that actually if we do a transfer rather than allow OES to a little bit more discretion, that it might not allow that flexibility that I think and innovation that I think we all want to see in this area. Am I reading that right, Councilman Mr. Strom?
Well, Mr. Chairman, my take on that is that if this money is transferred to the MHFA, they would be administering it, but they could administer it with flexibility. And I'm assuming that the Office of Energy Security would basically write the energy efficiency standards for this. They'd work out jointly what the program would be, and then the money would be transferred to MHFA, and they could use it through their existing lending network or other ways that both they and OES thought appropriate. So I think it would maximize the flexibility that I think people are trying to achieve.
I don't think either bill appropriates money directly to MHFA. Yeah. We just give it it's commerce money, and so they'd have to work out how to share that and with the different programs. Am I wrong about the House?
Mr. Eliff, could you get...
Mr. Eliff.
I believe we're talking about transfer, too.
Oh, you have that in the House bill?
Well, no, I don't.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Fuller.
Housing Finance Agency has odd appropriation language. Uh-huh. And when we appropriate them money in their general appropriation, we appropriate it for transfer to this fund. I forget the name of the fund.
Housing Development Fund.
Mm-hmm. And so I assume that's where the language came from, because it follows.
Which language are you talking about?
When you say transfer.
The same
where?
Language?
Where?
On 6. On R6, 3.18 at the top of the page. So I think the question is.
Oh, for transfer.
And so I assume that's the origination of that thought.
R6.
But once you transfer to that fund, you can direct the use of that money. So if there's concern that doesn't give them free play with that money, because all their programs have criteria. So whatever criteria we wanted to establish, transferring to this fund would not forfeit that ability of the legislature to do that.
Mr. Fuller, do we need language? I don't remember seeing this language. It's like a phrase. It's not even a complete sentence. Is that supposed to be a heading? Do they need that language?
Madam Chair, you would, if in fact you could, no, you don't need it. Just depends what your plan is. If you gave money to Commerce and had them transfer it to them, and have an interagency agreement. But I think if you're going to have the MHFA spend money, you have to get money to them to spend. So yes, you need some language giving them money.
Okay, yeah. And it was not the Senate intent. We'd never discussed having this whole pot of money go to MHFA, and so I think that's just something, a drafting thing that happened that doesn't necessarily reflect what we were talking about. So perhaps Commerce and MHFA could work on telling us what the language should say that would allow flexibility, because I think this has to be done jointly, and a good chunk of it needs to be administered by MHFA, but not all of it. That was not my understanding. I don't know what that was. You thought this was all going, they're going to write a check to MHFA. I guess that's what it sort of seems to say, but that's not
my question.
I don't even remember seeing that transfer language that may have been in that technical amendment that I'm not sure where that came from. Anyway, we have to talk about that, Ms. Blankenship. I'm not trying, sorry to put you on the spot here. But.
That's fine. Madam Chair, members of the committee, it was our understanding that the funding would be transferred to us to be administered through our programs and our lender networks, since Office of Energy Security doesn't have all the direct network across the state. So, but we are happy to work in partnership with them to direct this money. If it's not the full amount through loans, that's perfectly fine.
And Madam Chair,
Let me call Mr. Fuller.
Well, Madam Chair, I think this raises a larger issue of the formatting of the bills. Mm-hmm. And so, as I recall, when the Senate reformatted its bill to look like an appropriation bill, it compelled the inclusion of a lot of things in riders that maybe more appropriately belong in the substantive section. So, and maybe what the chairs want to think about is, having an index of things that you want to do, and then putting the substance in them, and then having a spreadsheet that does it. Because most of these things are temporary. I mean, most of the sections are for the stimulus money.
Correct.
But that's very confusing. I mean, it is confusing.
It is confusing, and we had some,
And I think, Madam Chair, that's I think that very reason is why, even though ours was an awkward bill for an appropriation bill, why we did really keep a framework and then add a section when we knew the dollar amounts that was the appropriating language.
So
I think we'll want to talk about that a little bit, about how best to do that to make sure that we're not tying people's hands, we're not making transfers that we don't want to make. And I'm glad to hear that it was just a drafting.
Well, I don't know. Piece. No, I mean, it was probably the staff put it together as the way it needed to be done in their based on their understanding of our intent. I just didn't really see that language before. So we hadn't really thought that piece through. What is the House, who does the House appropriate all the residential money to?
In conjunction.
Madam Chair, if you look at R6,
your language,
that the Office of Energy Security receives $12 million.
I see.
And then they, I think, we'll work out the partnerships with MHFA, where MHFA is using the existing financing programs, and we deliberately even just said financing programs to leave the loan language out, so that if there were other ways of leveraging more and more dollars, and then, of course, the windows were added on the House floor, although it's always been our intent to do windows in this area since they're eligible, but not an eligible expense under the low-income weatherization program. We just want to get windows every single possible place we can. That's still cost effective. And
General orders first? Can you find out?
Oh, you guys from here. And Madam Chair, one last thought.
Under call, so we're just trying to find out if we have roll call votes coming up at the beginning of the agenda or later.
Well, Madam Chair, while we're waiting for an answer for that, I think I'll just.
We're going to start with general orders. To the calendar first. Those are roll call votes. Okay. We'll finish with this witness. But.
Okay. I think that
Representative Kalin.
I think that just all of these dollars have to comply with the federal rules. So of energy progress, deep energy savings, job creation, et cetera. So I think that when we discuss the energy efficiency, residential energy efficiency that's not LIHEAP weatherization, we really wanted to provide the maximum flexibility. I mean, I appreciate some of the intent of the Senate language, but just knowing that the federal rules are going to require some real tight, I mean, Mr. DeFebre is going to have his hands full and tracking every kilowatt hour and every BTU saved. And so I think that we can probably work this out so there's the flexibility while getting some innovative programs out there.
Okay, thank you. Are there other questions for Ms. Blankenship? Thank you very much for your testimony. Members, we have, and we can talk to Commerce about that too, about the where the money should start and where it should be appropriated to. We have some folks who came down from Duluth to talk to us about the Duluth program that's funded in the Senate bill, and we do need to recess. I think this would be a good time to recess, and everyone's going to need to grab some lunch anyway. So we'll recess for approximately an hour, members. I think I'm going to ask the senators to come down even if we're still in session, so we can, because we got a lot of work to do, and our council is saying, how the heck are we going to get this done by tomorrow? And so we have a lot of work to do, members, and I'd like us to plan for some long hours today and tomorrow. Otherwise, we won't get it done. So I'll say at the call of the chair, but I'll say roughly an hour recess, and we can let you know when we set a time. Did you have a question?
No.
Okay. So the conference committee's in recess.